And next up, my special guest this afternoon, the actor Bertie Cavell. Yeah, we caught up with him just recently, and we were talking all about Dr. Foster, the amazing TV show that had literally millions gripped. But you'll find him on the West End stage in a brand new play called Ink. So, Bertie Cavell, we caught up with him not so long ago.
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I was first of all going to ask you about playing Rupert Murdoch as you do in this production, because let's talk about his voice first of all, because before we started chatting, I just got some old YouTube videos of him in conversation in the late 1960s, and you know, the first voice that came to my mind was the actor Sam Neill.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's a very specific sound, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, I know those YouTube clips well. YouTube's a great resource if you're going to be playing a real person. But it's interesting, isn't it? You know, that sort of Adelaide sound, but then also the you can hear the era in which he grew up, and of course he's an international man. So yeah, no, it's a very specific thing. Not so much now, but when we started at the Almeida, I used to get comments on the voice, and some saying it was surprisingly under-twanged, I think one of the reviews said. And then an article in the Evening Standard where Rebecca Brooks was quoted saying I sounded more like Dame Edna Everidge. So I feel if I can take the mean of those two remarks, I've probably got it dead on.
Yeah, because there is something about the voice that gives this sort of rather languid, calm approach to everything. But you didn't have a very calm man underneath all that at that time, because he was a man on a mission, wasn't he, in more respects than one?
Yeah, he's kind of a young Turk, isn't he, at that period? And there's this sort of appetite to disrupt the British establishment, which I suppose there's probably a deeper psychological motivation for, but also a kind of business motivation. People talk about disruption now, don't they, as stirring the pot and allowing new shoots to grow. So he and Larry Lamb, his editor, are absolutely kind of iconoclastic dynamos dropping bombs in the British establishment. And I think the energy of the production tries to capture that. You know, it's very much kind of red-topped production. There's music, there's movement. It's, it's not a sort of worthy, preachy play. It's trying to be a bit like The Sun was and to kind of shake things up.
Yes, and of course, it really did at that time. We hadn't read anything quite like that around that time, had we? It was the first of its kind.
Yeah, it was certainly. I mean, I think to a certain extent, that's what the play's about. Is this movement away from a certain kind of era of the patrician tone, perhaps, of the Mirror, towards this disruptive capitalist energy of giving people what they want, and I think that has overtones for us today. You know,
It's very relevant to today. And when you think about it, what he was doing there back in 1969, we thought was a bit of a revolution, but actually, I don't think even he could have predicted where we would be today. And yet, the play seems to resonate about the way we feel about the world now, even though we're going back quite a way.
Yeah, James Graham's past master at this, taking history and making it feel incredibly urgent. And I think there are obviously lessons to be learned from history, but he makes it incredibly sort of technicolor for us. Here was a moment where we were moving out of the kind of post-war reconstruction, and we're at the end of the swinging 60s, and Britain's reinventing itself as this sort of young nation and a place where we're going to move towards Thatcherism and so on. And it's just on the cusp of that change. So it must have been a very exciting time to be around. And Murdoch's absolutely seizing that energy and trying to get in ahead of the curve and build his empire from scratch. But as you say, nobody could know quite how vast that empire would become. It's really fascinating to kind of dial back. And I mean, there's a huge irony, of course, for the audience who know that his project has, I mean, certainly it's the kind of neoliberal project, I think, is more or less mapped exactly onto Murdoch's lifetime and the way that it's changed the world.
The actor Bertie Carvel, my special guest. We're talking all about Ink, and this is the latest play that he's performing in the West End. But also, we're going to be talking about Dr. Foster very soon. Millions watching
a real
it
stir
it
at the moment.
Is Bertie Carvel is my special guest today. We are talking about all his amazing performances, Rupert Murdoch, in a new play called Ink. And we were chatting earlier on about Dr. Foster, and we'll come to that in a second or two, of course. But also getting the measure of the character he's playing on stage.
I think the clip you first talked about from 1968, I watched that a lot, and I would say that he seems very measured, and there's a sense of great intellect, actually, and somebody who listens very carefully and thinks before they respond, and there's a great sense of power. But I feel the kind of clock ticking in those seconds, and the Wogan interview that you're talking about, there's a sort of ebullience that I think you feel he knows that he's ahead of the question, and he's not necessarily always answering the question. There's a slightly more politic demeanour to him, but he's controlling the interview very well, I think.
It's an amazing production in many respects, isn't it? Because it's quite timely. There is so much going on, and of course we can interpret how we want what we want from the play itself, can't we? Particularly what's going on with Trump and what's going on with social media and everything else. So when people come to this, they'll all have, I would imagine, have a fresh perspective on how they take it, I would have thought.
Well, I hope so. It's got powerful harmonics, I think, for our present moment. And our politics, and that's what I'm sure what James is trying to dig out. But what I think was quite important in making the production was not hammering those home, and they do become sort of like resonances and harmonics so that people can draw their own conclusions. And it's certainly not a polemic. Like a lot of James's work, is incredibly balanced and fair. And the approach I tried to adopt, you know, playing this character who's modelled on a real person, and you know, one has to be sort of, I suppose, journalistic about it. I have journalists in my family, but also it's a play about journalism, so it seemed appropriate to be to do good journalism on that, and to not be driven by a sort of polemic zeal, but just to try and tell the truth and get at the truth. I think art has a special way of doing that. I think art can reveal a certain kind of truth that perhaps journalism can't. I think people can draw their own conclusions. That's what I hope.
Well, I'll tell you what a varied couple of years you've had as well when you think about it, Bertie. Because on the one hand, you know, you've been fresh from Matilda, of course, on the West End and on Broadway. And well, we've seen you in Dr. Foster, of course, which I have to mention, because when I mentioned you were on, everybody went, you've got to talk to me about Dr. Foster. I'm not going to say too much about it, because there are a lot of people who still haven't caught up.
Right.
So we won't say too much.
Yeah, don't want to spoil it.
But when you were filming Dr. Foster, I've got to ask you, were you aware at the time of how big this show was going to be?
Not the first time round, no. I mean, it's, you know, one gets incredibly drawn into work, you know, the work that you're doing. And I always think things I'm in are going to be fantastically successful, but not always right. And I've never before encountered it on this scale. None of us, you know, if anybody knew how to create that sort of sensation, they'd write the book and make a fortune. I mean, nobody knows quite how to do that. So yeah, I of course, when we filmed the second series, yes, there was a huge weight of expectation, because 10 million people had tuned in to the season one finale and so on. So that was a slightly different thing. But you know, really, when you're making drama, there's so much else to concentrate on. Those sorts of things are in the background. But it's fun to sit down and kind of watch it with the nation and think, yeah, to be part of this moment and to think that people all around the country are tuning in is kind of thrilling, actually.
There's an there's an appetite for melodrama. We haven't had enough recently, quite obviously, and I think that came at just the moment we needed it, do you?
Right.
That's part of it, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure. Your guess is as good as mine in terms of, you know, how those currents move. I mean, I think it's really good. I think it's a great story. It's a gripping story. I think it's really well made. And if I do say so myself, I think it's quite well acted. But that doesn't add up to an enormous phenomenon. So I think you're right. There must be something going on in the kind of fascia of the country that needs a massage in that way. So I'm pleased to have been able to oblige.
Fantastic. Well, it's been great chatting to you today. All the very best with the run.
Thank you.
Super sore away time of it, as a banner headline would have
yeah.
the time. Bertie,
thanks,
pleasure.
Dave.
Thanks so much for your time.